Okay, with that, we'll have opening remarks, and we'd like to start at that end of the table with former Senator Mark Begich with your 2-minute opening statement, please.
Great, thank you very much, and thanks for the chance to be here today. And it's a great turnout, thanks to the two chambers. And I like what you said, the rules of engagement, almost sounds like a war. So we'll try to be careful with your questions there. You know, this election is about the future of Alaska. It's about where we're gonna go from today and what we're gonna do to make sure that the young people wanna stay here, live here, work here, do what you are doing, creating jobs and creating a future here in Alaska. You know, when I look at this election, I see some statistics that are just staggering to me. We're number 46 when it comes to education out of 50 states. We're the highest unemployment in the nation, highest crime rate in the nation. These are not statistics that we should be proud of. It's not the statistics that will keep people here. Last year, 3,000 Alaskans left the state. Millennials are the fastest group leaving our state because they don't see opportunity and hope. I will say that, you know, what we do today will have an impact far beyond this generation here, and that's what this election's about. You know, why are young people having to wait up to 2 years to get into the nursing program at our university when in fact 1,400 jobs were created in the medical industry, the fastest growing industry? Why are young people waiting to be pilots because we don't have enough professors over at the Air Training Center on Merrill Field as an example? Again, these are issues that we have to deal with and deal with them aggressively. You know, I was born and raised in the state. You know, I live in Anchorage and I remember growing up on the east side of Anchorage and we played kick the can and we swam in a lake called Gravel Pit Lake. Now they have a fancier name, it's called Cheney Lake. And you know, I think back to those days and you know, I was 10 years old when my father passed away and my mother was 6 kids, had to raise them at the age of 34. And what she always said to me was, you know, don't sit on the sidelines and watch things happen, get engaged, be part of the solution. Don't complain if you're not willing to step to the line. That's what I've done in this election. I think there are incredible opportunities for us and we can absolutely do better than where we are today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark Begich. Now looking for 4 more years, Governor of Alaska, Bill Walker. 2 minutes to open, please.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for this opportunity to speak to you. I certainly can relate to those in the Chamber of Commerce. I began signing payroll for companies I've owned since I was in the mid-20s. I've been involved in a number of Chamber of Commerces around the state. This is my first government job, and it's one that's certainly a significant challenge based upon what happened to our economy when the oil price of oil dropped to $26. You know, we had the choice. Are we going to just try to survive this one, or are we going to actually fix it? We've been in this place before many times because 90% of our income was tied to oil. We've now made the structural change that we now have 30% of our revenue comes from oil, and we have much more stability as a result of that. Change doesn't come without a price. The price of waiting 3.5 years is $14 billion. That's how long it took for the legislature to pass the bills we submitted 3 years ago. We would have had $14 billion more if we could have done that. You know, for me, this election really is about the future, and no more important than right here on the peninsula. With the project you have on slate, the Alaska LNG project, terminus in Nikiski, my goodness, what an opportunity for all of Alaska that's going to be. That's something that caused me to run for this office. It caused me to sit down with the White House of President Trump, President Xi of China, President Moon of Korea, Prime Minister of the President of Tokyo Gas. It's a matter of finishing this project. It's a matter of making sure we have our priorities. But we also have to connect Alaska to our economy. We don't have that. We have what's called the Great Disconnect. It's been talked about for years, but nobody's been willing to tackle it. I believe the job of the governor is to make the tough decisions that I guarantee you I don't make popular decisions, but I guarantee you I make them for the reason, not for my future, but the future of Alaska, for the next generation of Alaska. I spoke to a young class today at first graders in Mountain View Elementary School, and I look at that school and I just look at their future. That's what caused me to do what I'm doing. This is not about me. It's about my political future. This is about Alaska's future.
Thank you very much, Governor. And now the Republican nominee who is running to be governor, former state senator Mike Dunleavy. Mr. Dunleavy, 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, and thanks for the chamber putting on this event. And thanks for Governor Walker and Senator Begich for being here as well. This place, Alaska, it's a magical place. I came up here in 1983 as a young man out of college. My parents were working class individuals. My father was a mailman. My mother worked as a clerk for the city. And Alaska was a beacon of hope at that time because of the economy in the lower 48. Came up here, landed in southeast Alaska, and it was an amazing place. People were making money hand over fist. We were working the logging camp. The pipeline was just ramping up. It looked like there was no end to the opportunities in Alaska. And I tell people this story because it really did impact me. I went to a picnic that summer, July 4th, there were 20 people there. Every single one of those individuals in 1983 were making $50,000 or more. That was what Alaska was doing for folks in terms of employment. 2 years ago, I went to a picnic up in Mat-Su, there were 20 people there. People were making $35,000, $40,000. There were a couple individuals there that weren't working at all. They were just on government programs. So the whole tenor of Alaska had changed, especially over the last several years. As was mentioned earlier, Alaska now has the position of having the worst statistics in the nation in a whole host of areas. Worst crime rate, worst educational outcomes, worst unemployment, we're in recession, we're losing people. I don't think Alaska's had these statistics all at once at one time in its history. And the issue is we haven't run out of oil, we haven't run out of gold, we haven't run out of opportunities. What we've run out of is optimism, good policies, and leadership. And this is why I'm running for governor. Because this state has so many opportunities if we just have the right leadership and policies in place. And it's with all of our mining plays, our oil plays, potential timber, fishing, tourism, Alaska is poised to join the rest of this country in an economic renaissance with the right leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike Dunleavy. Now let's begin our question and answer, 60 seconds to reply. While this is a limited time for the people here in the audience, these candidates have all said that they will stay afterward to talk to you personally and answer any questions that we don't cover during this format. As well, they each have events and are going to be other places throughout the community throughout the day, so you have an opportunity to get your personal questions answered. The first question from the chamber, joint chamber meeting, and we'll start out with Governor Walker. What are your views regarding the use of earnings from Alaska's permanent fund to balance state budgets?
You know, there's no solution, of anybody's solution, that doesn't involve using earnings at some point. Governor Hammond talked about that. We did that, but it had to be a structured draw. If you draw too much, it's like having a 401k account that earns 5%, you're drawing 12%. You're going to lose the value of that. That's what we were faced with in Juneau. That's what the legislature did in Senate Bill 26 in doing that. It has got to be part of it. It doesn't solve entire amount, but it certainly does. That's what's made the shift for us to be now 30% dependent upon oil rather than 90%. You know, our money made more money than our oil was bringing in. So now we have the fiscal certainty going forward that we have not had before. You know, people talk about, you know, high unemployment. Of course we had high unemployment. You know, we laid off 3,000 people in state government. We laid out a lot of layoffs across the state. So, you know, we went through the biggest, $3.7 billion hole in the budget. You don't fix that without some impact to the economy. Absolutely not.
Thank you very much. And Mike Dunleavy, I will be leapfrogging back and forth so that everybody gets a chance to take a question either first or second. So Mr. Dunleavy, the question is, what are your views regarding the use of earnings from the Alaska Permanent Fund to balance state budgets?
So earnings are going to be part of the solution moving forward, but the way this was done, not going out to the vote of the people, not engaging the people, I think was the wrong thing to do. It was the wrong thing to do at that time. We had just laid off a whole bunch of well-paid oil workers and a whole number of other folks in the state of Alaska. We were in recession, and with that veto that happened with the governor, we lost $2 billion plus over the last several years that was pulled out of this economy. That withdrawal of money from the economy hurt not just individual Alaskans, but small businesses across the state, numerous restaurants, numerous snowmobile shops. They all closed down. It was a bad move at that time. My position is don't change something that's not broke. What's really broke is our spending. And unless we get our spending contained, unless we keep our spending down to no more than 2% a year, we're going to run into this problem again. And that structured draw of SB 26, all of that money will be gone in the next several years if we don't contain our spending.
Thank you. And Mike, if you get a little closer to the microphone next time. Mr. Begich, what are your views on regarding the earnings, using the earnings of Alaska's Permanent Fund to balance state budgets?
Thanks, and I've put on the table a little card that details it out in more specifics on the plan, but what I would do is take the Permanent Fund PMV, the percent of market value that the legislature came up with, which was Senate Bill 26, but I would not leave it in the hands of the legislature. When you leave it in the hands of the legislature, all they will do is debate how big the dividend is every single year and all the big issues. Crime, education, all these will not be debated. They even did it this year when they argued over 1,100 or should it be 1,600. So my plan would be to take the PMV formula, 50% to the dividend on a sustainable basis, constitutionally protected. The other 50% going into education, K through 12 with pre-K, again, constitutionally protected. The voters will make that decision. The idea is to take these issues out of the hands of these guys down in Juneau. Because when they have this, they will debate that issue and not the big issues we have to face as Alaskans. And again, I would say that plan that they've done over the last 3 years in this community, over $150 million was extracted out of this economy because of the cut to the dividend over the last 3 years.
Thank you, Mark. And you'll be first on this next question as well. Endangered species protection can bring major restrictions to resource development. What do you believe a governor's role is in advising federal agencies on the Endangered Species Act? And do you support the critical habitat designation of beluga whales in Cook Inlet?
Yeah, I actually testified on this when I was mayor of Anchorage. And you want to make sure, first off, that they're focused on the right species, not a broad sweep. That's an important part. So the governor does have a role to speak up and make sure their voice is heard. Also, any scientific evidence that we have is an important part of the equation. You need to narrow cast it, again, not having a broad sweep on what the belugas will be designated or not. On top of that, I think it's important that we recognize the importance of politicians not being scientists. You know, when I was in the U.S. Senate and when I was also mayor, we have a lot of politicians that love to tell you what the right size of the fish is going to be, all these other issues. The fact is we need to use good scientific research and information. And the governor has a role to provide that when necessary on the issues that affect Alaska, utilizing our own resources. And also be in there to testify to make sure that it's being fair to the industries that are being affected. And that's what I would do as governor, as I did when I was mayor.
And let's leapfrog over to Mr. Dunleavy on the endangered species protection, major restrictions for resource development, and specifically the critical habitat designation of beluga whales here in Cook Inlet, Mike.
It's simple. We need to balance the needs of our people in terms of economic opportunity, jobs, wealth creation, with that of wildlife. And so, as governor, I would work with our federal delegation, our federal agencies, to make sure that balance exists. Because when one is out of whack with the other, that's when you have a problem. So it's very important to make sure that we're not going to sacrifice the economic future, especially of Cook Inlet in this area, for an overkill or a designation that may not suit the needs of the time. So again, there has to be a balance.
Okay, thank you. We have a little difficulties with the broadcast. We're going to be switching some microphones here. But we are now on the endangered species protection question and the habitat designation of beluga whales in Cook Inlet. Governor?
I'm very concerned about that. I have been working with on the ESA issue with the Western Governors Association, Governor Matt Mead, Governor Otter of Idaho, and Bullock of Montana. The three of us, four of us, are very concerned about that. We have similar situations. You know, we are sometimes broad brush of endangered species that really impacts all of the state. What we're doing on the Tongass issue, the beluga is very serious, especially when we're looking at bringing a large volume pipe across on the gas line. I'm very concerned about that issue as far as that being listed on the endangered species. We'll continue to do what we do, is we'll continue to push back with NOAA and those in Washington, D.C. I also want to add, since I've got a little bit of time, that the discussion about $1 billion out of the economy because of the adjustment that we made to grow the permanent fund, you know, Medicaid expansion brought $1 billion into the economy. It brought $1 billion of federal dollars into the economy, and there are those that would change that, eliminate, and stop that $1 billion that coming in for health care for 44,000 Alaskans and a lot of hospitals such as Central Peninsula.
Thank you, Governor. I'm going to take a minute, and I'm going to switch microphones with Mike. What we're hearing is that the broadcast, they're not hearing you, and you are the important part on the broadcast, but this microphone is clear. So, Mike, I'm going to switch with you.
Testing.
And now everyone here can still hear me and you.
Is this one good?
That should make a clearer broadcast. And then if you guys will share that microphone, that way the radio audience will have better reception. Okay, question number three. What parts of the tax reforms passed by Congress do you agree or disagree with, including the opening of ANWR? And I believe this is Mr. Bakich's turn to start. No, actually it's Mr. Dunleavy's turn to take it first.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. What parts of the tax reforms passed by Congress do you agree with or disagree with, including the opening of ANWR?
Well, I certainly agree with opening of ANWR, and I agree with allowing the Alaskans and Americans to keep more money in their pocket. This is an infusion of cash into the economy, and I think it's helped fuel the growth that's happening down south. Again, as mentioned earlier, when we did the opposite here in Alaska, we actually ran ourselves into a deeper recession. And so, just to the point, I do agree with the opening of ANWR. I think that's potentially going to be a boon for the future of Alaska. And certainly when you allow folks to keep more cash in their pockets, they're going to spend it on the things that they need. They're going to help the overall economy, and that's what's happening.
Thank you. And Governor, the question is on the parts. What parts of tax reforms passed by Congress do you agree or disagree with, including Anwar?
Yeah, obviously on the Anwar part, and also on the reduction of 35% down to 21% on the corporate tax. Because what that is, that made the producers on the North Slope more competitive with other parts of the world without us having to do anything as a state. So on the federal part, they increased that. But on the 1002 section, I was honored to testify before the Senate Energy Committee on that. But what had happened was that we, you know, Arctic Power for years was doing a good job, and that they were replaced. Actually, one of the programs I vetoed. But a group called Voice of the Arctic came together. Inupiat, all sorts of leadership on the Arctic. The Voice of the Arctic going and testifying in front of the Senate Energy Committee was extremely powerful, again, the message across, saying we would like to develop those resources in our front yard, in our backyard. So I was very, very honored to be part of that testimony in Washington, and absolutely the tax bill was a huge benefit to Alaska as a result of that.
Thank you, Governor. And Mr. Begich, on tax reforms that were passed by Congress, what do you agree or disagree with? And, of course, the opening of Anwar.
Well, I think you'll find all of us agree on the opening of Anwar section, but here's the interesting part of this piece of legislation. Now, I will personally benefit from it, and I appreciate that to a certain extent, but here's what they did. They made the permanent for corporate tax relief, but not for individuals. So sooner or later, your relief that you have now is going to go away. And I think that's a significant problem with that tax bill, because that affects a lot of Alaskans. But on top of that, here's the piece that really affects it. The bill was never paid for. So what's going to happen is now we have this year in the federal government a $1 trillion deficit this year, up from $400 billion less than 3 years ago. And who's paying that? You all of us. Because if you look now, interest rates have been rising every single quarter because there's less supply of money, and therefore they're going to raise the rates. Credit card rates are going up. Rarely do you see a zero interest rate on cards anymore. Why? Because we are all paying for this now $1 trillion annual deficit to the federal government. So that is the problem with this bill. There's elements that are good and bad, but you got to pay for these things, or we all pay for it.
Thank you, Mark. You can hold on to the microphone and go first on this next question. The homeless population in Alaska is growing at an alarming rate, according to the 2018 Out of Reach report from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. An individual in the Kenai Peninsula borough needs to earn $20.81 hourly wage to be able to afford a two-bedroom home, costing an average of $1,082 a month. The average renter in the borough earns an estimated $1,498 per hour, according to that same report. What would you do to combat the homeless situation in Alaska?
I think there's a couple things. First, as always, if you can get this unemployment number down, you're going to have an impact in a positive way because you're creating jobs for people and also, therefore, income, which is an important part. I'm in the real estate business, in the rental business, and part of the big pressure that people have, and it has been partially solved, and that's healthcare costs that these individuals have to pay. On top of that, I think the issue with homelessness is a variety of things. There are people who are on the streets, especially in large urban areas that have mental illness issues, that are victimized or being victims in many crimes, and we have to deal with the mental health issue in our state. On top of that, we have people that are leaving corrections, and at the same time, they're hitting the streets if they don't have a place to stay. So there's a complex issue with homelessness. It's not only people who are destitute, but also people who have just lost their job. I can tell you, I visited the Kenai Food Bank here, and it was amazing, the statistics, an increase in use now because of unemployment in the situations of families. So it is about raising up, creating more economic opportunity, making sure people are getting good paying jobs so they can afford to live in our communities.
Thank you. And Governor Walker, on the homeless situation in Alaska.
A couple years ago, I issued Administrative Order 294, which set up a homeless citizens advisory committee in Alaska Housing Finance, and reached out to all Alaskans across the different walks of life to sort of address the homelessness issue. It is not any one single issue. You know, certainly jobs help, but also we have some issues out there that requires additional funding for social services and to help those that are homeless. Sometimes they're homeless because of a situation that they aren't in control of. You know, sometimes we're incarcerating people that are homeless, and because they need some health counseling and some. So as we've you know, retention beds for those that are addicted on opioids. I mean, rehabilitation facilities. So, you know, it's not a single issue on the homelessness issue. It's a big issue. It's an absolute big issue. Certainly, the economy and jobs is going to help that when we as we address that. in the near future, but it's widespread across the state. It absolutely is. We just need to have the facilities available so that not just to take care of them today, but give them a future into the years ahead.
Thank you. And passing the mic to Mike Dunlivy, what would you do to combat homelessness in Alaska, Mike?
Well, as was mentioned, it's a complex issue, and a lot of the folks that are on the streets, and it is a growing number, have psychological issues and substance abuse issues. But we also need to focus on the economy as well, because when you have people working, they're less apt to get into substance abuse, they're less apt to be on welfare programs, and that's been the problem in Alaska for the last several years. We've got to get this economy moving, we've got to get our resources back to workforce, we have to make sure that we're not taking any more money out of the pockets of people. You just mentioned the statistics on the Kenai in terms of the ability to pay for one's rent and how much they're making. We've got to get this economy going. But at the same time, we do have to deal with these folks. You have to make sure that our behavioral health approach is sound and is working. And we have to make sure that we're interdicting these the drugs that are coming to Alaska. I think if you take a look at some of the folks that are on the streets, you'll find that those folks are addicted.
Thank you very much. Governor Walker, you go first on the next question. How do you prioritize between commercial sport and personal use fisheries?
Very carefully, that's all I can say. I'm from Prince William Sound. I thought I knew something about fishing and sensitivities, and boy, did I have something to learn. I was told early on, run from the fish issue as fast as you can, and of course I did not, because I don't run. So what I did is I put together an advisory committee. I've had more input on issue of fish probably than anything else. There's many in this room I've spent a lot of time with, and I value all interest groups on fishing, but I said you need to be talking to each other rather than about each other. You need to meet over a cup of coffee, not necessarily in a courtroom. So I brought them all together. That first meeting was a little tense, but the good news is there was a second meeting, and now we're about to have the third meeting. It's a 25-member advisory committee to address the issues. There's a lot of smart people in the peninsula about issues of fish, and we need to listen to all of them and not leave it. You know, if you're not at the table, you're on the table, is the adage, and I want everybody at the table, and they have come to the table, and I can't thank them enough for doing that. I think there's a solution there. I really do. We just need to have the right people at the table and make sure nobody's left away from the table.
Thank you. Mr. Beck, how would you prioritize between commercial sport and personal use fisheries?
I've had to experience this when I was in the Senate working on the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And in the act, it basically dealt with commercial only. And what I wanted to do was make sure personal use, sports, subsistence was all part of the equation. Matter of fact, I was down here doing a hearing to engage people in this topic, because everyone is part of this solution. No one can be separate. And they are, as the governor said, these are tough issues. You know, I call them the fish wars. There's no usually winner at the end of the day. Everyone just takes a beating. We try to figure out the best course to solve these problems, because we all want to share in our bounty of fish in this state. It doesn't matter if you're commercial, if you're sports, if you're subsistence, but the key is you got to bring them in. And I remember doing hearings up in Tanana with the subsistence users, commercial fishermen in Southeast. You have to bring them to the table, and it means you're going to take some lickings. I mean, you got to be willing to take it, and at the same time solve the problems and deal with the issues. You cannot solve them all. One other thing, and as governor, we'll make sure there's a fisheries person sitting in the governor's office advising us on many of these issues.
Thank you. And passing the mic over to Mr. Dunlavy, how would you prioritize between commercial sport and personal use fisheries?
Good question. We have to be fair. We have to be fair and balanced. Again, there's multiple user groups that are trying to harvest the same resource. We have to be fair and balanced in that. We have to try and grow the resource. We have to try and make sure we get as many fish back in the rivers as possible. We have to manage our fisheries better. We have to have the right people in place, both as commissioner and on the various boards. And as governor, this is going to be one of my top priorities, to make sure that we bring all the groups together, that we come up with some answer, an answer that works for all the groups across the state and here in Cook Inlet.
Okay, hold on to the microphone there, Mr. Dunlavy. And the next question is, do you believe the state has a role in marketing Alaska as a tourism destination? And if so, what do you believe is an appropriate dollar amount to invest to bring visitors to Alaska?
Very good question as well. So Alaska is a tourist destination. And I remember when I was a young man, before I came up here, I learned about Alaska through movies, through television shows, and looking at magazines. And just the images themselves stirred a desire to come up. So I do think we have a role. The vehicle rental tax, for example, I believe it's at about $12 million this year. My approach would be that tax, which was supposed to be designated for marketing for the tourist industry, the tourist industry would get that amount from that tax, and if it increases every year, whether it's 12, 13, 14, 15 million dollars, to me that means that tourism is growing, we're getting more folks renting cars, and so I'm gonna keep putting that back into the marketing approach to tourism in the state.
Thank you, and over to Governor Walker. What do you believe the state's role in marketing Alaska as a tourism destination is, and the amount of money that should be spent to bring visitors here?
You know, one of the first things I did is I moved the tourism marketing out of state government and put it back into the private sector. The, Alaskan tourism associations are the ones that need to be doing that, so we transferred that out. We had to make some reductions, and we just came from that convention yesterday. So we did bring the money down, the dollar amount down, the vessel, rental tax, we had to use that elsewhere as far as, keeping airports open and highways clean and pullouts clean and whatnot. And now that we have the fiscal plan in place, now we've done that, made that turn, now we have that fiscal certainty that we have going forward. This year I've recommended that we're going to have in the budget the full amount from the vessel rental tax. And you know, the tourism business industry has been very, very helpful in this whole fiscal process. They've stepped up and come and said, yes, we have less money, but what more can we do? Direct marketing. I took 50 Alaskans to Asia on an Opportunity Alaska. That's the result that we're going to have direct flights coming from Asia to Alaska. 6.5 hours flight directly to Alaska from Asia. Pretty exciting, very exciting. That doesn't happen. You've got to go show up and represent the state.
Thank you. Mark Begich, the state's role in marketing Alaska, and what's the appropriate dollar amount to spend to bring visitors here?
You know, we all were at the travel industry conference yesterday, so this was one of their questions, and we had very similar answers. And the issue is you have the rental car tax that produces about $12 million a year. It's in the intent language to be utilized for marketing, which I agree with totally, but you need to put a box around it. And why I say that is because you can't have it at the whims of the legislature. Marketing is about a prolonged process. I know this as someone who's in the tourism business. You don't market 1 year and hope for the next year. The challenge with marketing dollars that are announced today is they won't be active until 2020 because the way the schedules all work. So you have to have this as a continual opportunity to market. The other thing is the governor's job as CEO of the state is to constantly market. For example, when I was mayor, we had international travel writers always coming to our city, and we met with them to pitch what was great about Alaska. So they then would use their free publications to promote what we have. But you have to have a continual flow of resource, use the rental car tax money, put a box around it so it can't be taken and stolen every single year, and you use it for long-term marketing.
Thank you. Hold on to it, Mr. Begich. You'll be first on the next question. How will you address the increase Alaska has seen in crime and the opioid use in recent years? Do you see a need to amend or repeal Senate Bill 91 as part of that solution?
Well, on my website, you'll see under Begich.com a much more detailed, so I'll just highlight a few. You do have to repeal SB 91 because it doesn't matter if you like it or didn't. There are some good things in there. It moved up some homicide levels of incarceration, but the fact is, people believe it has a certain impact, so you got to clear the deck. You have to have a much more holistic look. For example, when you look at the corrections and troopers, just among those two, 60 positions fully funded but not occupied. With the opioid issue, we're going to see some federal dollars coming down that are going to be shared with states all across this country. But if we just focus on opioids, we're missing the boat. It's about substance abuse. 80% of the people incarcerated have an addiction. And if we just, today it's opioids, last time it was meth, then it was crack cocaine. It changes as generations move forward. We need to focus on substance. 80% of the people incarcerated. And then we have to have a lot more stricter and harder penalties when it comes to drug dealers. And again, on my website, a lot more detail, but this is the number one issue we face. No safe community can have a growing economy.
Thank you. And Governor Walker, on crime, the use of opioids, and the repeal of Senate Bill 91, is it necessary?
You know, Senate Bill 91 has had a lot of attention. It's very significantly different than what it was passed when it was introduced by Senator Coghill and Fairbanks. It's significantly different. It was changed in a special session I called for House Bill, Senate Bill 54, which changed it significantly. Not everybody up here voted for that change. Secondly, on last year in 312, it's again amended it significantly. More and more amendments. The part about 91 that's a concern is we have the highest recidivism rate in the nation, 67%. Those folks are the ones that are going out and recommitting the crime. So that's one of the goals, is to bring down recidivism rate, you bring down crime, you bring down the number of criminals that are on the street. Secondly, thank you for tying it together with the opioid crisis as well, because there's absolutely a crisis. There's no question about it. They are absolutely lockstep, the two of them. You bring down opioid crisis, then you bring down crime. So more troopers, more funding for troopers, but better benefits for troopers. We need to be competitive in law enforcement. We have not been. So I gave a raise the other day. I propose another raise to be able to make sure we're not losing them to King County, other parts of the country. So.
Thank you. And Mike Dunleavy on crime, the use of opioids, and Senate Bill 91, please.
Thank you. I was honored this past week to be endorsed by the state troopers, PSCA, in long discussions with them. They feel that I'm the one that could take this crime issue and deal with it effectively. So SB 91, I believe, needs to be repealed. It's the people of Alaska have lost faith in that concept. We also need to make sure that we beef up our troopers, we beef up our prosecuting attorneys, the number of prosecuting attorneys. We have to make sure that the courts are open on Friday. And we're just going to have to be prepared for a spike of individuals going into our prisons until we get this under control. This has been allowed to atrophy for some time. In 2014, we had about 604 violent crimes per 100,000 people. This past year was about 804 per 100,000 people. This is job number one for any governor, anywhere, at any time. It'll be job number one under my administration.
Thank you. Next question. Governor Walkers, take this first, please. What is your position about Measure 1? Do you stand for Alaska or stand for salmon, and why?
I love salmon. I stand for Alaska salmon, but I'm no on one. And the reason why is I'm concerned about the uncertainty that it creates, the challenge it creates across our country, across our state as far as resource development. You know, we have a lot of laws in Alaska protecting our environment, and could we change those? Yes, we can. But the one I do think needs to be modified is some years ago we had something referred to as coastal zone management. It allowed local communities, local stakeholders to be involved in a process, not a veto process, be involved at the earliest stage. And I think we need to make sure that we have that opportunity to have input at the embryonic stage of a project and not sort of wake up to a headline that there's going to be a project. But I'm not in favor of Pebble. I'm a no on one because I want to make sure that that Alaska can develop our resources responsibly as we have done in the past and make sure we can have a good, strong economy. And this is not the time to be throwing one more layer of uncertainty on top of our regulatory process.
And Mike Dunleavy, please. The issue that has brought a lot of money into Alaska, ballot measure one. Stand for Alaska or stand for salmon? Why?
So I am a big supporter of salmon, but I'm also a big supporter of people and economic opportunity, jobs, creating wealth, creating revenue for the state of Alaska. I think this goes too far. And I think it's the wrong approach at the wrong time for Alaska, especially with our economy and in the shape it's in. This will impact municipalities. This will impact current projects, future projects. This really could put the end to Alaska's economic hope for Alaska. So I am a no on this ballot measure.
Thank you. Now over to Mr. Begich, your stand on ballot measure one and why.
I'm a yes on one, and it's interesting. I don't know if my two opponents have done this, but I went to some of these debates recently and watched both sides argue this and debate this, and I've already taken a position, but I was reassured once again, and here's the issue. You know, 45,000 Alaskans signed an initiative. Why did they sign that initiative? Because the legislative body and the governor did not do the job. The legislation sat there idle, and the way it works is if you have an initiative, and you can take it off the ballot, if you have a similar piece of legislation or legislation moving through the legislature. They didn't do that. But they did it with another initiative that was moving forward would have given all of you the right to vote on per diem and pay and all these things about legislators. But they lickety-split fixed that because they saw that as a problem because you would probably vote 90% on that one. So they didn't want to have that on the ballot. This is on the ballot because of a failed system. When I was mayor for 6 years, we never had an initiative. Why? Because you sit down with both sides, solve these problems, and move forward. And I believe that this piece of legislation, if it passes, our job as governor is to make sure that it does not interfere and harm large developments over time.
Thank you. Passing the mic back to Mike Dunleavy, who's first on this next question. What are your views, Mr. Dunleavy, on Alaska's Medicaid expansion?
It's a broken system. And it needs some overhaul. There's some estimates that we've overpaid by $160 million in the past year or two to providers. We're going to have to claw that back. We're going to have to deal with the federal government on this overpayment. Just about every meeting I go to, I have providers coming up to me across the spectrum that said this approach is failing them. It's failing their patients. We've got to fix this. It is broke. It's currently broken. And this is something we've got to work on because if we don't, it's going to be unsustainable. And it's going to limit access to Alaskans if we don't get this under control and manage this the right way.
Okay, and now back over to Mr. Begich. Your views, please, on Alaska's Medicaid expansion.
Well, I supported the piece of legislation that everyone reminds me about in the Senate, Obamacare. They gave the opportunity for Alaskans to put 44,000 people on Medicaid, and I do support it because a lot of the people who are working every day, this is health care for working folks. When you gave those statistics on people not making enough money to live, I guarantee you some of them are on Medicaid, working in stores all around this community. And we have to do everything we can to make sure our working folks have the capacity to continue to have the health care. But you can do two quick things I would do to it. First off, 95% of the procedures covered on Medicaid are covered. In other words, they're not delayed or not paid for by the state, 95%. But 30% of the cost is overhead, shuffling paper. Here's what I want to do. I want to just pick, I'll pick Tuckerman here. He's a general practitioner. I'm going to pay him $250,000 of Medicaid dollars, pay you the bonus and the benefits, but you're going to take every single Medicaid patient. And by the way, we're going to judge you on outcomes and no more paperwork because we're already covering 95% of procedures. Let's make it more efficient in delivering the system to make sure people get access.
And Governor Walker, your views on Alaska's Medicaid expansion?
That was a weird exchange. But anyway, I accepted Medicaid expansion. I was sued as a result of that, but I did it without hesitation. I gave the legislature a chance to vote on it, and they said they weren't going to vote on it. They didn't take it to the floor. I did. 44,000 Alaskans have health care as a result of that. And I do that because I think it's critical that we have health care. We can talk about it, and I know that one candidate here has said on televised debate that he would end the Medicaid expansion program. I certainly would not. Are there things that we can correct? Absolutely things we can correct. But health care is absolutely critical to Alaskans. You can't work, you can't fish, you can't hunt, you can't survive if you're on a subsistence lifestyle if you don't have your health. So I am a strong advocate for health care. We need to bring down the cost of health care in Alaska. That's a different discussion. We absolutely need to do that. But boy, when there's a Medicaid expansion available where someone's going to pay, 90-95% of the costs, we certainly accept that on highway funds without hesitation. We're certainly going to continue to do that on healthcare as well for Alaskans.
Okay, Mr. Bagans, your first to go on the next question. The Mat-Su Borough has filed with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to stop progress of the Alaska LNG project, urging further evaluation of Port McKenzie as an alternative site for the terminus of the pipeline and liquefaction plant. The City of Valdez has made a similar filing. What will you do as governor to support the terminus of the LNG project in Nikiski?
Well, first off, just side note, Governor Tucker and I went to school together in a school of a population of 175, so we can have these exchanges, which are good and healthy. It has been selected through the process. I know there's a process right now that Mat-Su has a third option they're arguing for. I think at the end of the day, you could pick the best site that's going to have the best opportunity, and so far this has been it. So as governor, you have to, people can appeal, they can go through the process, you got to make sure it's fair and open, and then at the end of the day, have the right site.
Thank you very much, Governor Walker. Are we muddying the waters? Are we muddying the waters on the AKLNG project with all of these interventions with the FERC regulatory process?
Well, the 40th slip, I've ever heard one. Hopefully not muddying the walkers, but I have played this out as it came in. That decision was made before I became governor. I'm a big believer of not starting things over again. We have started over in Alaska on many things. We start over. I said, let's continue this time. And so I have no issue with it coming to Nikiski. It should come to Nikiski. That was a process that went through a process to evaluate, and that's the process that was selected. Now, certainly, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, has always, in every project that they ever do, they have the ultimate say on where it goes. We have not wavered one bit. Everything we have filed has said it's going to come to Nikiski, and I have every reason to believe it's going to come to Nikiski. So that's not a difficult question for me whatsoever. And as long as it gets built and it benefits all of Alaskans, which it will, that's a critical thing. And FERC has contacted us recently and said that they wanted to move up, expedite the permitting process. How often do you hear that from the federal government? So I'm very excited about their interest and their support for this project.
Thank you very much. Mike Dunleavy on the interveners of Valdez and Port McKenzie. And what would you do as governor to expedite that project to be sure the terminus will be here in Nikiski?
I don't think the governor should game this. I think it should be determined by the private sector. And right now it's headed for Nikiski. And if that's the most economical port, that's where it'll be. And we just have to make sure that the overall project is going to be economical for the state of Alaska. There's three of us sitting at the table here. Only one has privy to the confidentiality agreements that are numerous and govern what's happening in the discussions with this project. It's going to be difficult to really understand if this project will be economical until we get in there and crack open those confidentiality agreements. I'm hopeful that we can monetize our gas. I'm hopeful we can put a lot of Alaskans back to work and lower energy costs. But again, I don't think the governor should game where this this port is going to be. And right now it's at Nikiski, and I don't see any reason why it should change.
Okay, thank you. And Governor Walker, first on the next question, which is about education. What are Alaska's biggest education challenges? What is your plan to address them?
Well, a couple of things. You know, we certainly, we always show that we're at the bottom end on the scale when on the third grade reading level. We put together a plan with the not just the Commissioner of Education, but with educators across the state for the Alaska Education Challenge. It's got three or four legs to it. One is to make sure they are reading at that grade level, at third grade level. The second is on CTE, Career and Technical Education. We need to have more relevant courses and make sure that they're focused on the region that they're in. Those with CTE in their curriculum, their graduation rates are significantly higher, increased by 78%. The third thing is we need to make sure we have a level playing field across the state of Alaska as far as resources. You know, what I saw today in Mountain View Elementary was phenomenal as far as the smart board they have and the access and they're working on computers and working individually. It's actually was, I could go a lot more than that on what I saw this morning. But it's also a matter of safety as well. The fourth piece, make sure our schools are safe. We have things in place for that. So the Alaska Education Challenge, take a look on the website. It's very broad. It involves hundreds of Alaskans, put that together, and I think it's a right direction.
Thank you. And Mark Bickage, what are Alaska's biggest education challenges, and what's your plan to address them?
Well, one of the biggest challenges, again, I've laid it out on my PFD plan, and that is you got to make sure you have stable funding that then education facilities can plan on it. You also have to invest in pre-K. You know, with almost 90% of the brain development between 0 and 5, this is the best investment you can make. And we can't just have certain people get in. We have to make sure it's accessible to anyone, anywhere in Alaska. This is an important part of insurance. So when they do get to third grade, they have the capacity to continue to grow and continue on and not be struggling. So that's an important part. The second part is, with education, you know, we're number 46 in the nation, but the more important statistic is 27% of our educators are from Alaska. My parents were educators, my sisters were educators, my sister-in-laws were educators. You know, we have to change our higher education system to produce more from our own state to educate in our own communities. May they be in rural Alaska or in this area or in Anchorage or wherever it might be. This is one of our biggest challenges today, because if we don't have Alaskans educating Alaskans, we're gonna lose out in the long term, in my view.
Mr. Dunleavy, what do you see as the biggest challenges in the state of Alaska for education, and what would you do about those challenges?
We have to make sure that our reading outcomes are happening by the time the child leaves third grade. I mean, this is universally accepted, it's backed up by research. Florida went through this issue many years ago, and basically what they did is they accepted the fact that their reading outcomes were poor, they marshaled resources within the system, they adopted research-based programs, and they focused on reading outcomes by third grade going into fourth grade. That is crucial. All the statistics, all the research shows that if you have a child that cannot read by that grade level, they're gonna have problems during their career. We also need to make sure that our students are proficient in algebra by the time they leave ninth grade. Algebra is a gatekeeper course, just like reading is a gatekeeper skill. Algebra is a gatekeeper course for future professions in sciences, mathematics, things like engineering. And we do have to focus on our career tech in high school. This is a blue-collar state. There are many great family wage-paying job opportunities for students if they have the right skills. Those three areas will be what my administration focuses on, and I'll be determined to make sure we have the outcomes that we're talking about.
Okay, thank you. Mike, hold on to it for, you'll be first on this next one. Let's make this one a bullet question, because I have a couple more, and then we need to close. So, Mr. Dunleavy, sales tax, income tax, or neither?
I think we need to control our spending. I think we need to audit our budgets. I believe we need to look for efficiencies, redundancies, duplication. I mentioned earlier that we've probably overspent by over $160 million in some of our programs in Medicaid. We need to look at that before we tax. So it's a no until we get our spending and our efficiencies in our programs under control.
And Governor Walker, sales tax, income tax, or neither?
We need to connect our economy with our services we provide. As simple as that. We're the only state in the nation that does not do that. By not doing that, we have gone through $14 billion of savings to be able to have that bumper sticker that says, by golly, we're tax-free. I'm not sure, but by golly, we spent $14 billion to do that. We've got to have, we know, we did reduce spending, $1.4 billion reduction. You know, we closed 40 facilities. We eliminated 100 programs across the state. We made a significant reduction, and some of those hurt. And we need to find out, decide what kind of Alaska we want and how we're going to pay for it. It's not a matter of what we aren't going to do, it's what are we going to do. None of them are popular. But, you know, I want to make sure we have enough appropriate funding so we aren't losing teachers because of a lack of retention, because we don't have the right retention program. That we don't have the opportunity to keep the you know, law enforcement, because they're moving on to King County. That takes money. And we just can't continue to do it through savings. We have to have a broad-based tax of some sort, like every other state, like I used to pay. I paid a school tax. I paid an income tax in Alaska. You know, it wasn't the end of the world. It was, you know, we got by. So I think we have got to have a broad-based tax in Alaska, no question about it. And I'm willing to say those words.
And Mr. Begich, sales tax, income tax, or another?
I think at the end of the day, no matter what anyone says, you're going to have a gap in the budget. It's going to have to be a combination or maybe one of the single items. But the key is you got to get 21 House members, 11 senators to agree. And the way you have to do that is you got to clear the deck from them debating the permanent fund every single year. Second, you got to take the easy money off. I mean, they blew through $14 billion of the savings, 80%. Because they were unwilling to make these tough decisions. You're going to have revenues, and we're all going to have to participate at some point here. But I would also say the taxes I would not support. I would not support a wage tax. That's the most regressive income tax you could ever put. As an owner of a company, I can take it in a dividend instead of a wage. But the pretty people serving us tonight, they have a wage. They will pay the tax. That seems unfair. And I will not do a gas tax. People say, well, we have the lowest in the nation. That's true. But we have no place like rural Alaska in the nation. And when you start adding that onto their burden, you're just making it more difficult for people to live in rural Alaska, and that's not fair. And also hurts the lowest income and the working folks of our state in disproportionately to anyone else.
This will be the final question, then we'll go into our closing remarks. Governor Walker, you're first to this. Recent investigations have confirmed unsafe conditions at Alaska's only inpatient psychiatric hospital, API. As governor, how will you address these conditions?
Well, we did address those conditions. When it was brought to us by staff, we hired an investigator to go and actually move into that facility to find out what the problems were. He did a report, which we honored that report. We did not challenge his report. We made some changes at the top to take care of that. The other part of it is we need more funding to be able to fully staff that facility. You know, many of our facilities, you know, the cuts sound great, but you know, when you aren't properly staffing, there's risk to employees and also to residents who use those services. We have got to stop this. You know, everything is we can solve everything in Alaska by cutting everything. You know, and that's where we're starting to see these problems. This API is an example of that. So we need more staffing. We need more beds. We need more treatment beds, and that's what comes with a full fiscal plan.
Thank you. Mike Dunleavy on the confirmed unsafe conditions at API. What will you do as governor?
This is a management issue. We have a similar situation going across almost all of our systems, whether it's education, public safety, you name it. And API is just a manifestation of this. We have to make sure that we have folks in there investigating, auditing, finding out what the problem is, speaking with the folks that are part of the working force at API, and trying to find out what policies or what approaches is the state taking that is not supporting that system. We've reduced the beds at API, while at the same time our need for those beds have increased dramatically throughout the state of Alaska. So again, this is just a manifestation of poor management. We've got to take a look at this. This is a critical component for our mental health in the state of Alaska, and under my as governor, we will be focused on making sure that this operation API is working properly.
Thank you very much. Mark Begich on the confirmed unsafe conditions at API. What would you do as governor?
Well, first off, the report that came out, I mean, if anyone didn't know this was occurring, I'm shocked, because several years ago they started eliminating the beds and the budget over there, and their plan was, well, we're going to do more outpatient service. Well, that would be great, except they forgot to fund it. And so, of course, you're going to have these impacts. So this report was not new. People knew about this, but they were unwilling to act on it and advocate for what was necessary in the sense of the unsafe conditions. Mental Health Lands Trust last year deposited back $6 million of unused resources. Now, I'm going to tell you, that money could have been absolutely used for outpatient services as well as for API. You know, when this problem at API has occurred, your hospital here, every hospital in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, wherever they are, they're now having patients waiting there, sometimes days, that they have to be secured while they're waiting for them to have a place at API because of the failure. Mental health services in our state are at a crisis. And anyone that didn't realize that, and there's resources that have been available and not matching those up, this is the kind of creative ideas we have to have in government if we're going to solve these very complex problems.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Baker, could you now give us your closing 60-second statement, please?
Well, first, thank you very much. You did a great job in doing all the questions. Appreciate everyone here. I would encourage you to go to Begich.com for a lot more information. But as I said at the beginning, this election is about the future. It's about how do we do better than where we are today. These statistics on unemployment, crime, and education are not acceptable and should not be acceptable for anyone in this room. And we should be doing everything we can to be more creative and innovative in how we approach this for the long haul. You know, we're going to differ. We're going to, you know, they're independent, Republican, Democrat. We're all Alaskans at the end of the day. We're here because a common thread binds us. We will debate issues, but we have to get out of this toxic partisan bickering. The last 2 years, 8 special sessions in the legislature because they were unable to work together to get things done. This is the change we have to have if we want to get to where Alaska can be, where those millennials are not leaving at record pace, where 3,000 Alaskans don't leave Alaska because they don't see hope and opportunity. I do. I see the potential for Alaska, and that's what I want to do as your next governor. I'd be honored to have your support. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And Governor Bill Walker, your closing statement, please.
Thank you for this opportunity today to address you. You know, I'm running for re-election, not because I want to add to my political pedigree, because I don't have one, not because I want to represent my party, because I don't have one, not because I want to draw lines around somebody's house and redistricting process, or somebody in one party is going to have an advantage over the other party. I'm doing this because I'm an Alaskan. I'm the only independent governor in the nation, and I'm very, very happy to be that way. You know, I worry about the future of Alaska. That's why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I worry. Of my vision for Alaska, we should have the lowest cost energy in the nation, the lowest, not the highest. The LNG project will do that. We have about $5 trillion of resources that we know of in the ground we cannot extract because the cost of energy is too high. We need to bring down that cost of energy, and that will put thousands, tens of thousands of Alaskans to work because of what happens on lower cost energy. You know, I want to have the lowest unemployment in the nation, not the highest. We do that with that project. You know, we are sitting on an incredible future, literally sitting on an incredible future, but for one thing, our cost of energy. And I totally disagree with those that say the governor shouldn't be involved. The governor better be involved, or that project not going to happen.
And Mike Dunleavy, your final statement, please.
Thank you. Can you keep moving? I can't find you. I'm running because the state, in many respects, is falling apart and shouldn't happen. There's only 730,000 people in this state, smaller than many cities and many counties down south. And we have unlimited resources to pull ourselves out of this. I oftentimes compare Alaska in a way to Venezuela or Iceland. Iceland has none of the resources that we have. It's isolated like Alaska, but yet it has an unemployment figure of about 2%, full employment, high standard of living. You look at Venezuela, which has the resources that Alaska has and more, that place is falling apart. It's all because of management. We've talked about API, we talked about public safety, we talked about schools. This is a management issue. And this is why I'm running. I believe that Alaska could be the greatest state in the country if you have the right policies, the right management, and the right leader in place. So I respectfully ask for your vote. I don't think Alaska could take another 4 years, and I think we need to look at a different option for the future, and this is why I'm running. Thank you.
Mike Dunleavy, Governor Walker, or Senator Mike Bakich, thanks for the life you have dedicated to this system, which we honor the red stripes of the red, white, and blue, and the price that's been paid for this system. We applaud that system, and we appreciate these candidates. Let's give them a round of applause.